Fear the Walking Dead Season 2 is over, but we're just getting started here on the Fear the Walking Dead recap here on Post Show Recaps. And now, here are the three guys who are sitting Shiva this morning for the loss of our boy, Killer Chris. I'm Rob Sestrini. Here is Alex Cable and Josh Wiggler. Sad times, guys.
Sad times. I thought that Shiva was the name of a different Fear the Walking Dead episode. Wasn't that the mid-season finale? Wasn't that called Shiva?
I don't remember.
That actually sounds right.
I think that's right.
I don't remember. Boy, this season has really just been just totally wiped out anything from before this.
It was a quick memory that I had, followed by a faster scramble to go to the Fear the Walking Dead Wikipedia to confirm that indeed Shiva was the name of episode 7 of season 2 of Fear the Walking
Dead. There you go.
Shiva, also what Ophelia was walking around stabbing things with this episode.
Yeah, and the Shiva down my spine as I saw what had happened to poor Brandon and Derek. Really, really brutal ending for those guys.
Brutal ending. And a lot of stuff, a lot of loose ends tied up here at the end of season 2. 2 hours of Fear the Walking Dead all in one night. And we had been talking about why were they doing it in this way, especially with a couple of weeks to go before Walking Dead proper comes up. I believe the next presidential election is going to be on next Sunday night. So I think that might be
the
part of the
next election. You mean the debate?
The debate. Well, yes. Either one.
Oh my God. Yeah, it's happening so soon.
Well,
we can move on to the next one.
Yeah, we can move on. So the debate is coming up next Sunday night. So I guess that that Nick and the Manawas and the Salazars, none of them wanted to go head to head with the debate.
Yeah. Wow. So we are turning away our attention from the apocalypse in Mexico to turn our attention towards, I don't know, there's a bad joke to be had.
Well,
here.
I don't both have it. Fear the Walking Dead and the debate have a lot of border politics associated with them.
That's the joke. That's the one. That's what I was going for.
Yes. So there's some parallel ground there between the two. But yeah, a lot of ground to cover. First of all, guys, how are you doing? Everybody's good?
Yeah. Sure. Yeah. Fine. Yes.
Yes.
Yeah. It's a nice day out here. Certainly no excrement about, which is always good.
Oh, excrement. Let's just get these guys out of here with their hashtags.
Yeah. Real grateful, those guys, huh?
No, they really are the worst.
Real upstanding young men.
Yeah. All right. So a lot of ground to cover today. I guess we need to start with our top story at this hour. Chris is gone. First off, let me say I will tip my cap to Fear the Walking Dead. I did not think that they would have the cojones to kill off one of the Manawa kids here on the show. I think I've been very public about that thought. They do it. I'm not sure why exactly. It seems to me, Josh, to be a rather senseless death here in the narrative of Fear the Walking Dead to lose Chris in this way.
I'm still wrapping my head around exactly, you know, what's the final moral here? Like, what's the message here of what happened to Chris and why he had to go and the way that he went? You know, no one is there to witness it other than Brandon and Derek. Is it just like, don't be friends with shitty people? Is that the moral here? I'm not really sure. But you're right. I mean, kudos to Fear the Walking Dead for actually pulling the trigger on a main character. It's so rare that this happens. And when it does happen, sometimes it's ambiguous, as in the case with Daniel Salazar. This is not ambiguous. Dave Erickson in interviews with Dalton Ross has said, yep, that's it. Chris is dead. Confirmed. I was a little skeptical of it, honestly, on first watch, because no one is there to actually lay eyes on what happened. But what planet would Brandon be living on that he would lie about that? That he'd be like, oh yeah, we shot him and it was a lie. So it happened. It was real. It will stay. All of that. But in terms of how it happened and the way it played out on the show in terms of like this flashback, rather than being something that was kind of built into the continuity in sort of just the way that it played out, I'm still scratching my head about that a little bit.
Alex, what are your thoughts on how they handled this? Because I did think that it was going to be a fake out, especially when it was this retelling telling, especially when they started telling the story one version and then we saw another version of it. I did think that, especially with an hour to go, that we were going to find out that Chris was still alive.
Yeah, I wasn't sure. I guess I wasn't thinking that. I did think it was very cool how, like, each time a new tidbit of information came out, it's like Travis is just trying to get himself a mental picture because he wasn't able to be there and it's clearly bothering him. So his mental picture keeps changing, and so we're seeing a different scene play out different times based on the new information that Travis is getting. I thought that was really like good cinematography. Yeah, these guys, like, you know, like Josh was saying, Brandon is certainly, like, he's done nothing in the time we've known him to indicate that if he says he shot somebody that he's all talk. Like, if anything, he's all action and no talk. So I certainly, I definitely was not speculating. Like, I thought it was very clear. Like, that final scene when Chris is, you know, out with the knee, you know, the bone exposed through his leg. And I ultimately felt like that was the actual depiction of what happened, because that was like Travis at the moment. He had finally received 100% of the truth.
The whole thing was just so bizarre, though, because you had Chris, who really prophesized that this was going to happen, this exact scenario, the moment before he betrayed his father when he said, "Hey, what's going to happen to me, Dad? What if I get sick? Don't you think that they barely know me? You think they're going to kill me?" And then it's like, "Yeah, that's a good point, Chris." And then he's like, "Guys, get him. I got him." And then ultimately, then they let, you know, 16-year-old Chris drive the car, and we did see Travis teaching Chris how to drive earlier.
Chekhov's
driving lesson. Not paying enough attention, I guess. I guess Chris not wearing a seatbelt either. I guess these no rules there for the douche bros. And Chris is thrown from the car and killed, but the two guys that were in like the flatbed of the pickup truck are seemingly fine, other than a separated shoulder.
They're very lucky, these guys.
Lucky, you know, guys. Now,
very lucky.
Centrifugal force must have kept them in the bed. That's all I can figure
out. Yeah, I guess so. Now, isn't the rule for the douche bros, for Derek and Brandon, where if anybody gets hurt, you have to kill them? That's the rule. Like, you can't let anybody die, or if they're not doing good, you just have to take them out no matter what they say. At the point that they suffer injuries in this crash, are they just exempt from this loophole?
I think they can walk. Isn't that what you're going to say, Josh?
Yes, 100%.
Like, can you carry your own weight to the next spot where we're going to mooch what people are? Like, they're parasites, right? They go a place and consume and move on. And if you can't travel, then you're no good.
And if you can't Travis, you're also no good. I think that's right. And I think, like, the dislocated shoulder, not a great look. You know, get that fixed. Otherwise, you know, maybe we are talking about exploring that rule. But I think if you could walk around, at least if you're not crying every time your pickup truck is like going over a speed bump, then I think that you can live for at least a little while longer.
Yeah, baby James is getting annoying with all that whining in the back. That was his problem.
So all of this is the setup for Travis to ultimately just lose whatever bit of mind he has left, ultimately, when he's able to put two and two together that Chris is gone, and he locks himself in a room with these two guys and just beats them senseless. Josh, were you buying that for that turn for Travis Manawa?
Yeah, I actually was. I think that, you know, Travis has been really anti-apocalypse. Like, he hasn't been willing to give in to those base instincts, and he isn't willing to just kill because that's what you have to do now in this world. He won't accept that. You know, he has killed before, but only when he has really, really, really had to, or when it's a mercy in the case with Liza. And he was really trying to show his son that there are other ways of doing things in this universe. I think now that that kid has been ripped away from him, the way that he's been ripped away, you know, first he loses him to the dark side. He can't control him. He can't rein him back in. He loses him to Brandon and Derek. And then to find out that his worst fears were confirmed and Chris didn't survive more than a week on the road with Brandon and Derek. These people that he already, you know,
like a day.
Like a day. Like 3 days.
Maybe an hour even.
Yeah. Probably. Yeah. They did not get very far. I think for Travis to have also have gone through everything that he had already went through with Brandon and Derek, there was no love lost between him and these guys. For them to so carelessly let Chris die, actually kill Chris, for all of that to play out, I think that Travis's rage just spills out. So I get Travis's reaction. Travis's reaction, I don't have much of an issue with. There are other things surrounding this story that don't sit well with me, but I think Travis exploding living in this way. That feels earned to me. He's so frustrated with himself for losing Chris. The last words he'll ever have said to his child is, "God damn you, Chris." He's not thrilled about that. Now Chris is gone, and he's just going to unleash on these horrible, horrible douche bros. I get that. I can see how Travis makes this leap.
And yeah, it's like as gritty and gruesome as it was, right? Like with those two guys, you're almost, it feels justified to the viewer a bit. But then, yeah, like Oscar walks in and he just slams the door on that guy's head. And that was a moment where I just went, oh God, like that's a deviation there.
It was like a blind rage type of thing. So like, I get it within the context of blind rage, but I mean, things that happen after that, I have some problems with.
All right. Well, yeah, there's some collateral damage there that happens in Travis's beatdown of the douche bros. And obviously, Oscar is a casualty of that, which really starts to set the stage for the banishment of well, it starts off as a banishment and then ultimately an attempted murder and then ultimately real murders that happen in trying to escape from the hotel, the beloved hotel. This is why we can't have nice things.
No, I'm going to miss the ice.
Yeah, we're going to miss the ice.
Yeah.
All right. So, Josh, where do you want to take this storyline in terms of the leaving the hotel?
Well, I think this is probably my big issue. It's like this whole scene that happens where Travis, he's killed Brandon, he's killed Derek, he's accidentally greatly injured Oscar. He has done all of these terrible things, and they are lucky. They are very lucky that Travis is going to be allowed to be exiled as opposed to being executed outright. They've talked about the relationship with violence and what the punishments are and everything like that. And then Oscar ultimately succumbs to his wounds, and they're very angry about this, and they're going to go and they're going to kill Travis. And Travis himself is kind of resigned in the way of like, all right, I get it. Please just take me out back and shoot me. Don't do it in front of Madison. Don't do it in front of her daughter. All of that. I would buy Madison killing somebody to protect Travis. But Alicia, who has spent so much time befriending these people, working alongside them, doesn't really have a huge connection to Travis.
She's badass, Travis, Josh.
Travis is obviously, her stepfather, and her mother cares about this man very much. But to you guys, did it feel at all earned or in character that Alicia would kill somebody that she has spent all of these weeks helping and working alongside in order to protect this guy? It just felt like it was completely out of nowhere for me for Alicia to do that.
Well, yeah, I think you touched on it. She did it for her mama, Josh.
Yeah.
Is that it? Is that the only reason?
I think it's definitely a factor. And I think, there were some conversations earlier in the episode between Madison and Alicia where you're really establishing like family first. Like at the core, we need to remember who's actually our people and who we need to protect if push comes to shove. And there was some element of that between Alicia and Travis as well, where Travis was saying like, look, Chris was spiraling. I should have listened to you. I should have protected you like a father should. And so yeah, you do get like a little bit of reconciliation before that happens. I get what you're saying, that it seems a little rushed. But then again, like, they were definitely going to kill Travis. And like, Travis at that moment maybe represents like the one guy who can protect them from these unstable dudes who, I mean, who knows? They kill Travis and then maybe they're still angry. And if they get exiled without Travis, they're in a lot more trouble.
Yeah, it didn't really bum me out too much that she would end up doing that. That really wasn't one of the things where I'm really scratching my head.
I mean, obviously, I'm number one Alicia fanboy over here. So, caused me to raise both eyebrows. I was like, brr.
Although yet another example of like, man, doctors just dropping like flies in this new world.
Worst thing you could be.
The most valuable guy you could have in your group and literally the one with the shortest life expectancy.
I felt like that they sort of realized that they were going to be out of this place one way or the other. I don't think that it was really going to be where Alicia was going to be able to just stay at the hotel and set up shop. So I think that she felt like, okay, well, I guess by any means necessary, let me get out of here with both Travis and Maddie. And let me do what I can to sort of save my father figure in this world.
Sure. And there's the whole thing from earlier in the season where Madison tells Alicia what actually happened to her dad. So maybe she's, craving a father who's actually going to be there for her, everything like that. Maybe I can get on board with that. But I wonder, did the show miss an opportunity to kill two characters in this episode? Should the show have just allowed Travis to die? Is there more utility in having a really angry, vengeful, spiteful, people mourning Travis in season three than for Travis, who was this beacon of morality, you know, this compass in this show, the one guy who was not going to cross those lines, for that man to cross those lines finally and suffer the consequences for it. Was there more utility to be had in letting Travis go in the season two finale than keeping him around for season three? I kind of feel like they should have just let him go there.
Well, I think that they did tap into something very interesting where that Maddie is trying to make Travis feel better. And she's saying to him about how, look, I understand you had to kill for your baby. I get that. And she sort of hints as though I've had to do that. And she talks about the Celia thing, but she gets into like, and even from before this, I've done that. And it really does start to beg the question of, did Maddie kill Mr. Maddie, Nick's dad?
Oh, I hadn't even thought about that.
El Papa de Nick?
Yeah. Alex, did you have any thoughts on this?
I hadn't really considered that. I mean, I definitely heard the line where she said, I've been like this since before, but I thought maybe that just meant like something about, you know, her, maybe her and her husband were both had depression or both had, you know, like issues with alcohol or, you know, something dark about their past. I didn't necessarily read it as like, you know, it was another example of murder so much as like, I've always been in this dark place and you're finally here with me.
Mm, yeah. I'd love to know from people in the comments if they had the same interpretation that I had or if it was sort of like an innocent enough comment. But Josh, is there anything for you in the fact that now we have like a little bit of this piña colada song type thing where it was like, oh, you were into murdering in cold blood this whole time and so was I.
Yeah, they're connected now. You know, they'd been away from each other physically for so long.
If we only would have known, we could have been killing people this whole time.
Well, I think that's going to be a lot of season three. Like, I think that they just took a turn for the Grimes. I think that, you know, now they're really both willing to bite out throats in order to protect their young. So I think that we're probably going to get a lot more of a violent look at these people. I think that this family is going to be a lot more like Killer Chris moving forward. I think that's going to be the legacy of Killer Chris is, yeah, you do have to kill in this world to survive. You do have to kill to protect your people. And that's really bleak. And I think that that's the worldview that both Walking Dead shows have operated in pretty much from the start. But it's, I don't know, it kind of sucks to lose that one character who was still clinging on to the old ways, and now that guy has bought into this worldview. I feel like losing that guy and not having him around anymore so that he has some sort of shred of decency still, I feel like obviously that's the way that I would have liked it to have gone. It's not the way that it went. I just feel like there was an opportunity to kill Travis and the whole Manawa line of this show, streamline Never. Things a little bit further, but no, one Manawa must be standing at all times. Perhaps it's that every season finale has to end with the death of a Manawa, so maybe Travis is just being saved for the season.
Oh,
you know, it's interesting though, Josh, like when you said that, when you first said, like, I was thinking, you know, maybe they could have just killed Travis here, my mind went to that Rick moment where he's biting out Joe the Claimer's throat, because I do think like something really valuable about the Walking Dead franchises, and certainly more so the original, but I'd like to see Fear kind of go this way as well, is these like massive roller coaster character arcs as a result of such like impactful events. Because, I mean, these are such traumatic things, like people around you getting bit by undead monsters all the time. Like, what a horrible world to live in. So yeah, it makes sense to see people like impacted by these profound things. And then you learn that there's people around that are even worse than the monsters. And that's another level that people have to deal with. So I think, you know, seeing Travis snap and then seeing, you know, if he comes back and then he's like, you know, level 3 farmer Rick after this. And then, you know, level 4 Alexandria leader Rick. You know what I mean? So like maybe we'll see Travis on some kind of, you know, He's kind of gone down the hill, and maybe he'll gradually build his way back up. Maybe this is like, you know, the necessary fall you have to have before you can like be reborn in this new identity.
A reborn identity.
No. What I want to find out is, Strand does not leave the hotel. Alex, is this the last we have seen about Strand? Is he going to live out the rest of his days drinking at Strand's bar and at Hotel Abigail?
Oh, that'd be really depressing. Better not be. I mean, he was on Talking Dead.
Yeah.
So I really hope he's not gone.
But via Skype, though, right? He wasn't on the couch.
Is that right?
He wasn't on the couch.
He Skyped in. That's a bad sign.
That's a really bad sign. No.
Couldn't even. Skyping couldn't even. They couldn't even. They couldn't even shell it out to bring Strand into the studio.
Time to start hounding Coleman Domingo on Twitter.
We'll ask him.
I hope not. If Fear the Walking Dead decides to move on without Strand, I'm out. I'll be out. That's the end. That's the end for me.
Two can strand.
But yes, I'll strand.
In hindsight, though, wasn't the wedding guest storyline just sort of tacked on here, where there was this crazy lady who lost her mind, the Sue Ellen Mishki, who was sort of wandering around the hotel, who stabbed Strand, and really no payoff whatsoever on that storyline or that front. It was just like we needed something, some reason to send Maddie out to the marketplace, and we'll have Strand get stabbed, and then that's how she ultimately, you know, stumbles onto the El Pelicano supermarket.
Are you accusing this show of spinning its wheels?
In that storyline, just that we never did anything with her, and it was never like Strand went to go find her and kill her, and that's why he got kicked out of the hotel or anything like that. Maybe it's coming in season 3, but that just seems very tacked on in hindsight.
Who knows where the hotel and Strand story goes from here? Strand is not done on Fear the Walking Dead. There's no way. Strand, like, it's so clear that Strand is the best character on this show, so there's just no way that Strand is going to be left behind. So some sort of follow-up, whether we see Strand pop up in a place that's unexpected and he tells the story of how the hotel was finished off, or there's more hotel story to tell in season 3. I think that that's the thing. I think as far as the mother and what was the utility, what was the purpose of that storyline, I think now we can say in retrospect it's kind of foreshadowing a little bit of what happens here with Travis, that she is a mother who is super grief-stricken from what happened to her daughter and takes it out in a violent way, and clearly that's what Travis does when he finds out what happens to his child. So maybe it's just kind of calling the shot of what Travis is going to do later on, and beyond that doesn't serve much purpose.
Right, good point. And it's her craziness that causes Madison to lay down these ground rules that then later she's forced to abide by. So that is like a definite factor that is kind of interesting.
Let's switch gears a little bit and get into some of this Nick storyline, which is a big part of this episode as well, because we had Nick talking about this plan for a couple of episodes where he was going to go and make the drop without letting Alejandro know what was going on. They need the water. Nick needs to make this move. And so he goes down there and he sees that Marco has executed the people that came over there. And he gives Nick a warning and basically says, like, hey, Nick, just so you know, we are going to come and invade your town. We know where it is. And just so you have plenty of time to plan that, then you go back and then tomorrow we're coming to invade.
Yeah, Nick's like, come on, man, we're the only CVS in town. And he's like, joke's on you, there's a Rite Aid down the street.
But Nick must be heading back to the Colonia and like having this same thought that you're having, Rob, at some point, like, wow, those idiots really should have killed me. Like, they really had me dead to rights, and they just let me go. Well, that's great for me, but really
what
dumb
incentive
for them.
Yeah, they underestimated the Gringito.
It's like, wow, this plot armor I picked up during my last shopping spree is really working out.
Make no sense whatsoever. Why let Nick go back and have all this time to plan a trap for them?
It made actually no sense. Like, the only sense that you could say that it makes is, like, this is just how arrogant these guys are and how much of a sure thing they feel it is. So why not just let Nick leave? But also, like, it's totally within character for these guys to just, like, pop Nick on the spot. So I don't know. It's like, you know, if this was, you know, I don't know, Rob. I've got no answer here. It makes no sense to me. It's bizarre. They just let Nick walk away, and okay, that's great. And that ends up completely biting these
literally
people in the butt. So good on you guys.
Well, I did think we noticed in that scene that, you know, Marco does say a couple times, like, I like you, and it's a shame that this is happening, but this is happening. And I do feel like, you know, one thing that we don't probably credit Nick with enough is that Nick is definitely fluent in scumbag. Like, he knows how to speak to bad people, even if he has, like, maybe a different moral compass. So, like, he's able to get in and get out in a lot of situations where it's like, yeah, he really should be shot. But then, you know, he's also underestimated a lot of times because he does all these stupid things.
It was so crazy. And then he ends up coming back and letting everybody know. And we find out that, of course, no, Alejandro does not actually have a cure. He is not actually immune from the Walker bite. We have this Hulk, really, maybe the goriest scene in the history of Walking Dead, between this patient that gets up and becomes a Walker, who then goes after Nick. He bites Alejandro. He comes down and then bites the nose off one person, bites the finger off another woman, and then Nick has to kill this Walker by putting thumbs through the eyeballs. It really seems like, Josh, did that seem odd to you, this whole sequence?
Well, now I have to go and pull an Antonio Mazzaro and rewatch all of Fear of the Walking Dead to see if Nick's thumbs are really that long. Like, I had never really paid attention to the size of Nick's thumbs and, like, the sharpness of his fingernails, but those are some formidable weapons, as proved here in this finale.
It was pretty amazing. No other way to accomplish that task, Alex? I mean, it seems like that there's so many ample ways to kill a walker. Why did Nick decide to do some sort of, like, Mortal Kombat finishing move to this walker?
Yeah, well, I think it speaks to the fact that Nick isn't he's a lover, not a fighter, Rob. Like, this isn't a guy that's got a lot of experience with his fists. I think most people would go straight to just pummeling it with something, a fist, an elbow, a blunt instrument. But no, like, Nick made a move that, like, you know, like, is instinctive and reactionary from someone that doesn't punch, clearly, because he just grabbed and squeezed.
The grab and squeeze is an underrated zombie killing method, though.
Apparently so.
I'm glad this show is shining a light on it.
You got to find that soft spot. I guess it has to be eyes, or I guess maybe like temple, or just make sure it's like a really squishy zombie that's been out in the sun for a long time.
Yeah. Not my favorite thing to see.
All right. Well, Nick is able to spot this helicopter, which really sparks this whole plan for him to take.
He's really good with eyes. Huh? Like, able to see that from a mile away?
Yeah. He's able to then evacuate the entire colonia out and then get them to, so when the Marco and the bad guys come, then they're able to pull off this. I called this the George Mason, Josh, in my notes, where Alejandro, even though he's terminally ill, he's able to pull off one last move to save the day.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Nick originally was going to drive the bus, but Alejandro was secretly in, like, the back seat, and he came. I was like, you go live your life. I don't have much time left. I can do this. I'm trained to drive buses. Mm-hmm. Great move. Great move from Alejandro. One last act of heroism.
Yeah.
Oh, man. And what about that moment when Nick goes to him the night before and he's like saying, like, you still can live a beautiful death. And he's like mixing a cocktail for him to shoot up with. And I was wondering if, like, Nick was going to, like, you know, give him enough to overdose on or something. And I'm just like, wow, Nick has, like, evolved into the man in black all of a sudden. Like, where did this come from?
I did think that Nick might be euthanizing Alejandro in that moment. I didn't think that he was just giving him enough, like, to get through his mission.
Yeah, it was a shock to see that Alejandro, like, lived through the night. You would think that, like, in his very weak condition, that no amount of drugs, like, would have been a good idea for him. Like, it would have just, like, let him peacefully drift off into zombie land.
No, that was not the case. And really questionable move by Marco and his guys to, once they reach the colonia and they realize it was evacuated, to then start to shoot all of their guns, their machine guns, and use all their ammo by shooting into the air.
That was stupid. That was a bad call for so many reasons.
Like, a lot of reasons why that would be a bad idea. Really questionable decision from Marco and his whole crew. So ultimately, Nick leads the colonia to go, and I guess they must have been really close to the border to get everybody to walk up there.
Yeah, Tijuana's not far, right?
I guess not. I mean, I have no idea.
Or the people of the colony are just, like, very fit, you know? Just, like, a lot of good stamina on these people.
Yeah, considering they didn't really ever get the water from the supermarket, that they're really set up well.
They're set up really well. By the way, so sad what happened to that poor family, right? I mean, you know, are we going to even acknowledge that these guys just, like, straight up shot these people? That's so brutal.
Yeah, really terrible. And really does speak to the stupidity of Marco and his entire crew, because we end up with Travis and Maddie and Alicia. They end up going back to El Pelicano to go and look for clues about the whereabouts of Nick. And Maddie has the presence of mind to, even though the entire store is evacuated, you know, they just leave those three dead bodies behind, which I thought was actually very questionable for Marco, that they just sort of like left those dead bodies there just to like give Nick a message in case he showed up. Like, it seemed odd that they wouldn't just dispose of those dead bodies, those corpses that were hanging around.
Seemed like laziness.
Yeah, a little lazy. But
they're not going to bother with somebody's corpse that they don't even know.
Yeah. But Maddie ends searching the bodies. And I was reading a review of Fear the Walking Dead that was on Forbes.com this morning. And the author of that piece really took Fear the Walking Dead to task and calls this maybe the dumbest thing that's ever happened on this show, of that the woman, I believe it was, had a wallet. And in her wallet, she had a driver's license with the address of the Colonia, which allowed Maddie and Travis to go and figure out where they, now that they had the address, they were able to then go see where Nick had been living.
Oh, it's 5 Colonia Road. Of course. I know that place pretty well.
Yes. Yeah, Luciana's brother was running the DMV.
Yes.
You didn't know?
And the author of this article, Eric Kane, who had written about how, I mean, how stupid is Marco, who had been interrogating them for seemingly days, which never checked to see if they had an address in the wallet. They ultimately have to go and spy on Nick to be able to find the address. Also, that there is no chance that these people lived in the Colonia before the zombie apocalypse and had any sort of like government issued ID with the address of the Colonia. And even if they did, how are Travis and Maddie able to, they don't have MapQuest. How are they able to get directions to the Colonia?
That's what I was going to say too, right? We've never seen someone pull out a map of Mexico yet in this series.
No, they just go by the compass. They're like, oh, go north. Go south.
Yeah, didn't Travis figure it out how to find places without a map from reading White Fang? So, you know, this is one of his Jack London tricks from back
I guess
of the day.
So.
Follow the North Star.
Yeah. So that was really a rather absurd thing that happened, where they were able to track down the Colonia based on the woman having the address of the Colonia in her pocket.
Yeah. I mean, that's a nitpick, but it's a fun nitpick. That's amazing.
hadn't even
occurred to me. But that's really great.
Yeah, it hadn't occurred to me either. I did like Madison's complete lack of hesitation, though. She's come a long way. She's not even hesitating now to loot a corpse. Just, you know, kneeling right over it and getting right to work. Doesn't matter how gamey it's gotten.
Yeah.
She's all business now.
Yeah.
It's not a, doesn't have time for these emotions.
Yeah. Well, no, really no hesitation that it could be a walker either.
Yeah, good
go
point.
Dive right in. And so then that leads Madison and Travis to go back to the Colonia, and they run into Alejandro, and they find out that Nick is headed north with everybody to the border.
Headed north. Nick looks like a grown-up North. I know that's Elijah Wood, and we know what Elijah Wood looks like now, but I feel like Nick could have been like, North could have grown up to become Nick. Do you think anyone who's listening to this knows what North is?
I don't. I have to be honest.
Okay. We'll go look it up. Good movie. Solid film.
But Nick really just carries himself like such an arrogant douche. And really, what was with this windbreaker? I mean, the Nick character has had so many crazy jackets, but this just zipped up all the way windbreaker. He just walked around like such a pompous ass, I felt.
He's the leader now, Rob. He's got he's learning from Alejandro about, you know, the importance of public perception.
Who would follow
and,
him?
You know, sending a message.
Are you saying that it was a bad windbreaker?
Yeah, bad windbreaker. Absolutely. That was the indicator that I got in terms of this.
So, what if the coat had been like more of like a Neo-Matrix full-length trench coat? Would you have been more down with that?
Yes, I think so.
Okay. And he had like a briefcase with like his like various zombie smashing tools.
Mm-hmm. That's what he's building toward. That's what he's gonna go full Neo by the time Fear the Walking Dead is over.
I'd be down with that. Yes,
he is the one. He is the one.
Well, he leads everybody to the border, and then I guess like sort of like a sneak attack out of nowhere, Border Patrol just comes out and just opens fire, and they end up hitting Luciana.
Great job, Nick.
The world may be over, but Border Patrol is still a pain in the ass.
Oh my god.
Yeah. They're not letting people, anybody cross. No, it's interesting because I felt like that we had in the earlier in season two, Josh, correct me if I'm wrong, but wasn't their border patrol preventing people from America coming into Mexico? I thought it was the other way around.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. That's a very good point. I don't know. Things have changed.
Yeah.
Things have changed in the 5 days since this half season has started.
Not exactly
sure. Everyone snuck into Mexico and then everyone died and now everyone's trying to sneak back.
Sneak back. Alex, do you think that Luciana is potentially in mortal danger here, or do you think that she's going to be fine for season three?
Oh, well, it's tough. I think she could potentially be in some danger. I think, you know, certainly Nick is the main character and our impression of Luciana is less so that, or at least mine is less so that, you know, they're really bringing Luciana in for a long-term haul and more, you know, her relationship to Nick and how this will affect Nick. So I think she's possibly taken off the table in the next season. I don't think it's necessarily a sure thing, but she definitely got hit.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if it was the arm, but it looked like it was pretty close to the heart if it whisked the arm. So that's tough.
Boy, I feel like she could do better than Nick.
I'm telling you, the windbreaker.
Right now,
it's a good,
look.
It's
a good
looking
with
guy.
You.
I mean, he's a handsome guy, but that's just I think that she could do better.
Should have stayed at the Colonia. Damn it, I knew it.
I don't know. But yeah, the border seems to be a big thing because we haven't even talked about the Ophelia storyline, which the episode opens on Ophelia and she gets like her own little set piece of like, you know, predictably like any vehicle in Fear the Walking Dead or The Walking Dead for that matter, eventually is just going to like have exploding hoses. And then she ends up sort of like a sneak attack walker ambush, which she then casually just walks away from in terms of her escape towards the border herself. But then she sneaks through a hole in the fence only to be grabbed by a familiar face, Josh.
Oh my God, Unsa, it's me, Gemma. Do you think that the rest of the Sons of Anarchy are going to be protected here in the zombie apocalypse? Is that where we're going? Dave Erickson, showrunner of Fear the Walking Dead, being a Sons of Anarchy veteran, and Robert Kirkman very famously said that Sons of Anarchy was his favorite show ever. So maybe we're going full Sam Crow here in season three of Fear the Walking Dead.
Oh my God.
Wow.
It's on the road to charming.
Let's do it.
Yeah, that's fine. I'm good with that. That could be a really great fix for many of my problems with Fear the Walking.
Yeah.
Maybe behind all these Border Patrol guards is Agent June Stahl.
No, I would like that. I would like that. She was one of my favorites.
Oh my God. I love June Stahl. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Wow. I can't believe Sam Crow.
I love seeing Unser here. It was great to see Unser here for like 5 seconds just to be, hello, sweetheart. Welcome to America, sweetheart. Mm-hmm. Buenos dias, sweetheart.
Yeah.
I don't know why we have Unser on the show all of a sudden. There's zero elaboration on that character, but you gotta hope, you gotta pray that that guy is sticking around for most of season three because he could really become a power player here in Fear the Walking Dead in terms of who are the best characters on the show. Just add Dayton Callie to the mix and he is already a front runner for that status. So I think between him and Strand, like that could be really good. That could be great to have this guy around.
I was very surprised that we didn't check back in with Ophelia then after that. I mean, that happens, you know, rather early on in the episode. I think it might even be in the first hour and we never check back in to see what sort of danger she's in. Just like, okay, just don't worry about that anymore. We'll see. And I feel like that we've been teased about Daniel Salazar, about how he's going to be back in the mix. Very surprised that not only do we see no signs of Daniel Salazar, but also it appears, Alex, as though all of our characters are leaving Mexico. So I don't know how we ever get Daniel Salazar back in the mix.
It's a good question, although I was reading an article this morning that a showrunner basically, you know, confirmed that he's alive.
Yeah.
So that, you know, he's going to come back into play at some point and in some fashion. All I can figure is that, you know, Strand still isn't too far away, right? So maybe that's going to, if those two guys come together and then we're following those two guys, that could be a great buddy comedy.
Mm-hmm.
best storyline in Fear the Walking Dead history.
Yeah, that's like the Tyrion
and Salazar Roadshow. Yes.
Yeah, that's like the Tyrion and Varys of Fear the Walking Dead. Yes. That's what we need. Yes.
That is what we need. Great. And so that's, I mean, basically that's where we leave things off here in Fear the Walking Dead season two, where Nick is with the Border Patrol and Travis and Maddie are headed to the border as well. And we also have Ophelia north of the border. So it looks like that season three is at least going to be set in the on the border with them heading back to the United States.
That seems to be the case. Yeah, it seems like we're leaving Mexico behind. Season two's brief sojourn to Mexico, it seems like we're going to be putting that behind us as season three moves forward. How do you feel about that? Do you feel like we're rushing out of here, or do you feel like we spent enough time here? Too much TJ for one season?
I don't know. I just don't know where ultimately we're going. I know that The Walking Dead, even like The Walking Dead proper in this universe, it's always about, okay, where are we going? What's the next thing? But I do feel like we're spinning our wheels a little bit here. I don't know necessarily if there's a there that we're headed towards.
Doesn't seem like there's a there right now. I mean, the there right now is whoever owns this helicopter and whoever these military guys are that are still active and are still shooting people and are still fiercely protecting the border. I think that's the there right now. Is that a compelling enough there? I'm not sure. I'm not sure that I'm there yet, but that seems to be where we're headed right now.
Alex, what about you?
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting. I was wondering if, you know, that guy Marco referred to as controlling all the drugs in Tijuana, if that was one of the guys that died with him or if that's still a player that's out there. I mean, he did just say, like, see this guy, and then it just kind of like pointed to a guy who wasn't really looking at the screen, which made me think he might be auxiliary, but he kind of implied he was a major player. So I'm kind of curious about that, like if there's still some kind of major, antagonist factor not too far from the hotel that could come up. And then, yeah, I'm just really curious about the Wayne Unser character and what's his deal? Like, especially, living right there by the border and having that shotgun and just shooting at someone he saw. Like, I got the feeling like maybe he's just like, I don't know. It's just like living off the grid. And like, he was doing this before the world ended and now he's just like still doing it. So if he's that kind of character, then yeah, that's scary. I wouldn't want anything to do with that.
Yeah.
And as for the helicopter, I don't know. Maybe it's Deputy Chief David Hale.
Oh, I hope so.
Oh, my God. David Hale? Wow, he's back.
Yeah.
Back again.
The helicopter thing is odd. I mean, what is it, Josh? Some sort of military installation? Is that possible?
Seems likely. Or it's just like some, super rich guy who's like, I love helicopters. I'm going to go to my place where I've got my helicopter camp, and I'm just going to go ride around, and that's how I'm going to spend my time in the zombie apocalypse.
I siphoned fuel out of trucks for 4 days so I could do this joyride.
Yeah.
Oh, this is so neat. So worth it.
Maybe Strand could date him if it's another rich guy.
That would be great. I'm sure Strand would love that.
Room for one more in your chopper.
Yeah. Strand's next move is just finding the richest surviving human being still in the apocalypse, and he's just going to mooch off that person.
And that's fine. That's fine. I would watch that. I would watch that.
As would I. Yes.
I make a mean cocktail.
Do you like ice?
Yeah. All right. So do we think that we will end up with Travis and Maddie ultimately, finding the members of the Colonia who escaped and now they're going to be on a mission to go save Nick from the Border Patrol?
Yeah. Yeah. It'll take half a season for them to reunite with Nick. And the next half season of Fear the Walking Dead is going to be Madison and Travis and Alicia trying to rescue Nick. That's what we're in for next.
Oh, my God.
What? I don't think it'll take that long, because you saw the colony of people that did get away fleeing directly south. Madison and them are traveling directly north. It was binocular-esque distance. It can't be that far.
It's going to take two episodes for them to see the fleeing colonists.
Whatever happened...
Yeah, maybe.
Whatever happened to the girl that was from the airplane that she was with our friend, Josh, that was on the podcast?
Alex, yes.
Yeah, Alex.
Yes.
She was in the opening credits.
Spectacular question. Yeah.
In season two. And
what a question. Great question. Fantastic question. Where is she? Where is Alex, as the French woman would say.
She's going to pop up in full Border Patrol guard.
Yes.
They keep like popping up with the new antagonist du jour in a new uniform.
You again.
Season.
Yeah.
You know, I kept waiting for season two to really deliver on the promise of Flight 462, but I guess that it ultimately was just completely pointless. That
one-way ticket, Josh.
Yeah, Fear the Flying Dead, not a round trip. That was a one-way destination to Nowheresville. Population Alex, okay. Soul Survivor.
All right.
Not Alex Kidwell.
Not Alex Kidwell. Not to be confused.
There's a lot of that going around lately.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. In the zombie apocalypse, soul survivor are two words that would never be used to describe me.
Okay. All right. So then where do we go from here, Alex, then, in terms of heading towards season three? Is there anything that you would like to see happen in particular?
Yeah, I mean, I guess eventually I'd like to see storylines reconverge. I don't know if it has to happen right away, but I think The Walking Dead, the original Walking Dead is, you know, people are really liking where it's at right now. And I think it's because you've got these like kind of factionesque elements. We've got like the Alexandria contingent and then like the Negan contingent. And then there's like this other group on horseback or whatever. And who are they? And, you know, you begin to see like this kind of macro view of a new world being built. So I'd like to say I know where Fear the Walking Dead, you know, we're not like a few years into the new world the way Walking Dead is, but I think like ultimately like I'd like to see it get there, and you know, maybe that means we have to deal with like a couple episodes of, you know, sorghum planting and whatever, and if we have to do that, then I guess I'm okay with that.
Over here, get that grain, girl.
Yeah, Josh, do you think that that's the issue here? Do we need some sort of like compelling antagonist for this group, people who are more than sort of just like interchangeable parts like Marco or Celia or people that sort of show up for an episode or two, and then like, do we need like a governor or a Negan or somebody who's just going to really be a thorn, like better than the douche bros?
Yeah, I mean, we didn't even really have a Segan, so they really dropped the ball on that. I don't know. I mean, I think that there were certainly pieces in place in terms of what you were just talking about, Alex, like in terms of the factions and everything. We had the Colonia, we had the supermarket, we had the hotel here this season, so they've definitely tried to go in that direction at least for a little while, and I don't know why it wasn't successful ultimately. I think that, you know, some of these characters just weren't compelling enough, and some of the storylines just weren't compelling enough. A lot of it felt, you know, like echoes of the proper Walking Dead, like material that has been used before. And we're talking about a possible solution to Fear the Walking Dead being a solution that worked really well on Walking Dead, to have the governor around for a season or two, to have Negan show up and have the threat of Terminus or whatever. Is that something that might help Fear the Walking Dead along? Maybe, very possibly. But you have to also acknowledge that the answer that you're seeking in this case for Fear the Walking Dead would be just to ape the proper Walking Dead. And I think that that speaks to my bigger problem with Fear the Walking Dead's existence, is that it's really just doing what the Walking Dead has already done. And I think by virtue of the fact that it's set a little bit before the Walking Dead, it has, you know, it entered production years after Simpsons did it. Like, it's that kind of thing where Walking Dead has already done it. And is there really any new ground that Fear the Walking Dead can cover? That's why I've always thought, you know, it baffles me that if AMC wanted another Walking Dead show, they wanted a second Walking Dead on the air, why not do an anthology? You can constantly reset the characters. You can constantly tell a different story. You can be in different parts of the world. Why not experiment and be weird and have a different thing every single week or every other season or however it would work? But tracking these characters and seeing them go through these journeys that have really, really similar shades to what we've seen all up and down the Walking Dead, it's just never really, really done it for me. And I don't know who it's really doing it for. Mm-hmm. There's certainly people who love this show, and, you know, respect to those people and power to you. But I think that for me, Fear the Walking Dead, I don't know how it ever stops being a hollow echo of the main Walking Dead.
I do think that you bring up an interesting point about the idea of the anthology, but I do...
That'd be a great show. It would be a good show.
But I do feel like that's a little bit like in hindsight. I think that they maybe just thought like, okay, how hard could it be? Just like put these people, you know, going up against different zombies. And I think that maybe they underestimated how important the source material was in the first place, where I think that maybe there was a little bit of hubris that they thought that they could just simply replicate what was working on the original Walking Dead.
Yeah, yeah, I think I do like Josh's idea of like American zombie story. That would definitely be
fun.
Yeah,
but good.
Yeah, but then also, you know, I do feel like maybe if Marco had been a more compelling antagonist, if we had spent more time with him, besides just that one, he's really given like one opportunity to be any kind of like haunting character. I agree, Rob. Something about not giving someone a name, giving them a title. Maybe like the guy behind this Border Patrol group will be like the Lieutenant General. Or maybe that guy will be something we can get.
I want to hear more about that guy.
Lieutenant Governor. The Lieutenant Governor.
Yeah. Now suddenly it's intriguing.
Yeah.
Ominous.
Okay. All right. Well, we love to hear from you guys and your thoughts on season two of Fear the Walking Dead on postshowrecaps.com. Any other thoughts on Fear before we start to eventually segue into talking about what's going on in the Walking Dead proper?
Strand.
Okay, Save Strand. Bring Strand back.
That is all.
Save Strand. Thank you, Unser. All hail Unser.
Yeah.
Okay. You know, what if Unser's the big bad? I mean, that would be
It'd be interesting.
Right?
Sure. Why not?
It's me.
Yeah, it's me. I'm in charge now. Where's Gemma?
I don't know. That could be good. Yeah. All right. Good stuff. All right. Gemma. What's the hashtag? Where's Gemma?
Works for me.
Josh, is there anything else that we
talked
about?
Very, 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 very specific hashtag. If you're asking me to come up with an alternative that I like more than that, I don't think you're going to find anything from me.
Josh, could you give us green sleeves one last time? Just to...
green sleeves. Goodbye, Ophelia.
Oh boy. All right. Well, I don't think that this was the most fun season of television I've ever watched, but it certainly was fun getting to come on and sort of vent about what we saw here on Monday mornings this season.
Cathartic.
So, absolutely.
Thanks so much to both of you. Josh, I know you have a lot of stuff on your plate. Well, what kind of things are you working on right now?
We've got a bunch of podcasts happening here on Post Show Recaps right now. Fear the Walking Dead is over, but Proper Walking Dead is going to be starting up soon enough. So Rob, you and I, we will get into all of that. I think that we'll have some fun in the lead up to the Walking Dead season premiere. But right now we are talking Westworld here on Post Show Recaps. Westworld just premiered this past Sunday night. Joe Garfine and I are going to be recapping every single episode of that show. She is actually away for this first episode, so I will have a recap coming up with a special guest host pretty soon. Luke Cage is also happening. That was released on Netflix over the weekend. So Kevin Mahadeo, who is my partner in all things Marvel Netflix, is joining me to talk about Luke Cage. We're podcasting about that show 3 episodes at a time. So look out for those. The first episode has already dropped. The first podcast is already on PostShowRecaps.com. And we're still in the Mr. Robot postseason. Antonio and I, we had a really fun time talking to you, Rob, about your thoughts on Mr. Robot. That was a really fun podcast. That's available right now, and we have a couple of other postseason podcasts that we are about to drop. So keep an eye out for all of that stuff, and it's all good things. Everyone is happy.
And Josh, did you happen to see the Mr. Robot sketch on Saturday Night Live this weekend?
Not yet. I know that it exists. I'm
very fun. Very fun stuff. My full recap of this weekend Saturday Night Live is up on postshowrecaps.com as well with Rich Tackenberg from the Margot Robbie hosted episode. And Margot Robbie, star of Suicide Squad, that Alex Kidwell did a podcast about with Kevin Mahadeo. It's all leads back to Post Show Recaps.
Yep. The storylines all tie together eventually, right?
Eventually. Yeah. Unlike some other shows that we just talked about. All right. So looking forward to hearing what you guys have to say on postshowrecaps.com. If you're not subscribed yet and you want to get on board before we head into the Walking Dead proper, you can subscribe to our Walking Dead iTunes feed. Go to postshowrecaps.com/TWD iTunes. I'm Rob Cesarino. Of course, you can follow Alex on Twitter. He's at Alex Kidwell. And Josh is on Twitter at Roundhouse. Howard, Josh, that you have some Fear the Walking Dead interviews coming?
I have an interview that I'm going to do. I'm going to get on the phone with showrunner Dave Erickson in about 40 minutes. So we will see how that goes. Have some questions for him. I will be posting that on the Hollywood Reporter this afternoon. So by the time you're listening to this podcast, perhaps that interview is ready. I will tweet out the link once it is live.
All right. Have a good one, everybody. Take care. Bye.